Welcome back everyone to Campfire Tales. Tonight's video is about a firefighter who encounters something so horrific he had to tell. Because what he saw beneath the burning woods was so much worse than fire. Stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss this. If you're new to the channel, please consider subscribing, clicking on that bell, and smashing that thumbs up and telling a friend. Now let's get spooky. The world was on fire. Walls of flame crashed in, sending 100-foot trees toppling to the ground like slain giants. The air was screaming with heat. It rippled off the encroaching circle of flame in great shimmering waves, highlighting burning trees, brush, flocks of spark that flew upward into a night sky that was deeply black, choked by galaxies by a kingdom of smoke. And it was deafening. The crackle of heat devouring wood. The hiss of things dying in the millions. The whistle of flames as they spread like a disease. Through the death core, I couldn't hear the crash of metal on metal as Sandy pounded away at the bunker door with his red-tipped service axe. I was on a defensive attack, putting wet stuff on the red stuff in an attempt to buy my only ally enough time to get back to safety. We were soldiers stranded in the enemy's belly, surrounded by an army of flame that would not stop until it had melted the meat from our bones and our bones to ash. Suddenly, hands grabbed me from behind, and before I could react, Sandy was dragging me down into the bunker. We hit concrete stairs that stacked down, descending into the unknown, and for a minute, I thought I saw. Then the metal door slammed shut behind us, and the world was bandaged into darkness. After all that's happened, I wish we would have stayed upside and let ourselves burn. It would have been better like that. It started as a routine night. The siren had sounded as just past midnight, sending a dozen of us falling down poles into flame retardant suits with oxygen tanks and sealed masks, and then into red engines which would carry us off to fight the burn. Like D-Day soldiers in the landing raft shooting through sheets of salt water, we rode into heavy silence. It was comfortable that way, and it had become a superstition. We didn't speak until boots hit the ground. It had been like this all year. In the Ozarks, some junkie was always ashing down their meth lab trailer home. And since our firehouse serviced a stretch of Missouri that contained no few number of Breaking Bad fans, we were always getting woken up to douse a drug fire. I figured tonight would be the same. I thought that we would just be wrestling yet another chemical burn with a dozen redneck onlookers howling at us in despair. But I was wrong. God, how I was wrong. Even before I saw the eerie red glow polluting the midnight sky, the dispatcher cracked over the radio to remind us. This was a Class F wildfire. The sky was burning and Sandy broke our rule. Holy shit, he muttered, eyes wide and bright. Holy freaking shit. A small patch of the northern westerns. A splatter of mountains crinkling the horizon was on fire. I could see trees crumbling, falling, as an army of flame charged down and sprawled the suburbia between us and it. A disembodied voice spoke.
Air support en route, ETA 20.
It took me a moment to realize that this was the dispatcher. It didn't take nearly as long to realize that 20 minutes was far too long for support of any kind. The burning trees was separated from the housing track by a long ribbon of highway. a blistered stretch of asphalt that made our engine bump and sway like a galley fighting stormy waters. We were all grateful for that road. It would make laying a defense line that much easier. We all piled out of the engine with our hearts hammering our throats. Some guys from fear, others from excitement. It was a rush, either way. A mainline kick of adrenaline soaring through your system, powering each step under 75 pounds of equipment. Kozik, your typical beefy walrus-stashed flame fighter, was the company officer, and ordered me and Sandy on to Anchor Point. We couldn't have protested even if we wanted to. The great rush of heat was roaring closer to the road with every passing second. It was maybe 200 yards from reaching us. While the team went to work, Sandy and I grabbed our gear and fell into a torturous uphill jog. Up into the woods. We pissed out a fire line, hoping to prevent a flank by the rapidly spreading army of flames. The woods were burning ahead of us and to the right, not giving us enough time for comfort, but more than enough to finish our duty without any major wrenches. Then, it all went to hell. I don't remember it clearly. It's caught in my memory like a series of broken snapshots. Random stutters that I cannot exactly place. I remember staggering back as the flames shot forward and gobbled through our defense line, like it was a dried-out kindling. I remember the hollow whipsaw sound of air hauling through my lungs, as the fire swallowed my horizon on four sides. I remember screaming to Sandy that we needed to route before it was too late. But by then, it was too late. I remember dumping a haphazard defense attack in the attempt to buy us enough time to... To what? The next thing I knew, with trees crumpling around me like felled gods, Sandy was dragging me down the bunker hatchway. The one that would feed us into the hive. Our comms did not work down there. In the concrete stairway to hell, my headset crackled and spat static until I finally clicked it off. We staggered down in silence, guided by the beams of the hazy flashlights we kept just in case. The stairs were narrow, the ceiling low, a concrete tunnel that forced me to stoop. And even then, I sometimes heard my helmet crack off to low-hanging roots that had forced their way in. The sound of the flame battering the metal door receded behind us, bleeding off into a low whistle that eventually faded altogether. Then it was just the sound of our ragged breath, our heavy boots pounding down as we went into a daze, unspeaking and single file. The only thing that mattered was finding the next step, the next step, the next step. I didn't have time to consider what might meet us at the bottom. It was a tunnel, but it looked like a wasp's nest. The walls, grayish and wrinkled, bore hundreds, thousands of tiny black pockets. An awful vespary, a trypophobia nightmare. Sandy had asked me something. I looked up at him. His boyish face drawn and pallid beneath his clear visor. What? I asked. What is it? He repeated. I don't know. I don't want to know. Looking at the mass of tiny hives, like so many dreadful eyes, made my skin crawl. I would have told him not to touch it if I had seen his hand reach out, but I didn't see it until it was too late. I turned as his outstretched finger prodded the wall, which was sponge-like and wet, and watched with glowing dread as the holes around his fingers punctured and expanded with a dry rattle. No, I started. The holes tightened and released a spray of thick black fluid. Sandy was splattered in foul ink before he had time to react. Gobs of it misted his chest and helmet. I knew it was acidic almost instantly, beneath the goo, his suit began to disintegrate, hissing smoke and a reek that breached my suit and stung my eyes. In a daze, he tried wiping it off. It was like an awful vaudeville skit, Sandy desperately wiping at his chest, arms, and helmet, which did nothing more than spread the acid discharge to his gloves. Then he started to scream. He was melting like wax. As the suit dripped away from him, so did his flesh, falling off in waxy ribbons. It melted through his visor and then his face, pulling the skin from his flesh and the flesh from his bones. By now he was more gore than suit. Great streaks of tissue and bone fell apart as blood dripped, dripping, dripping on the floor beneath our feet. It filled his visor and overflowed in a red sheet. He stopped screaming. He couldn't anymore. He was drowning on his own flesh. I hadn't moved. I couldn't even if I wanted to. I was drunk on exertion and fear. My heart was hammering my ribcage hard enough to bruise. Finally, after an eternity of listening to the sickening splat of my melting friend hitting the ground, he pinched forward and bubbled apart into a puddle of human goo. What remained of his suit deflated as he flooded out of it in a sizzling wet mess. I backed away as the pool of meat liquid crawled across the ground towards my feet. It was a hindbrain reaction, step after step, unaware that I was making them. Until something thumped into my shoulder. A dry rattle filled my helmet as I turned to see the wasp wall which had expanded and contracted around me. I staggered back, bumping another wall, turning and bumping another. The tunnel around me pulsed with awful industry. It rattled, hissed, punctured, and blew out acid. I turned and ran as the wall of black ink sprayed out from countless faucets. I was gripping my Halligan tool as I stumbled out of the tunnel and into the white forest, the acid spray still hissing at my feet. The Halligan is a fireman's best friend, and it felt good to be in my hands. A pickaxe crowbar love child that could open just about anything, including heads, and after what I had seen, I wasn't taking any chances. I looked around and felt my heart somersault nauseously. I was outside? No, that wasn't quite right. As I had fallen out of the tunnel, the walls and ceiling had flown away to accommodate this place. This white forest. Mountains of naked trees, gnarled and bone white, rose and fell against a sky that was impossibly black, like squid ink. Milky light splashed down from the jagged silver that was too narrow to be a moon. It looked like a gash in the heavens that had been filled with light instead of blood. A giant cave, like a hungry mouth, was burrowed into the earthly mountain nearest to me. Darkness seemed to spill out like smoke, awful, suffocating darkness. I knew deep down that I needed to avoid that cave at all costs. I swallowed and took a careful step forward. Glass crackling under my boot, I winced. It was loud. Too loud. I lifted my boot and looked down. A broken human skull looked up. My eyes went to the forest, the white forest. And I saw not a maze of tortured wood, but one of bone, twisted and molded into impossible tree-like shapes. It made my stomach weak and my eyes felt like pouches of squirming insects. I swallowed, and a chill ran through my body. The feeling of eyes crawling all over my neck. I turned to look at the cave, mouth snarling at me from the other side. Looking at it made me feel dizzy. Something dreadful was buried deep within. Move. A little voice in my mind forced my limbs into motion. I walked, slowly, surely, weaving through the debris of death. rotting corpses draped in moldering flesh, broken bones from things long forgotten. The cave receded behind me, and so did the feeling of eyes on my flesh. I gripped my axe tightly as I wound through the bone forest. A while later, I found the river, the one that ran through with a lame trickle of water that reeked of corruption. That's where I saw the woman. She was hunched over the riverbank, drinking. I couldn't tell from where I was. Her back was to me. Soft white flesh beneath a silky dress, and it was hitching up and down. As I drew closer, I realized that she was crying. It was like music, the sound of her pain. It flooded my ears like honey and vanilla, calming my raging heart. I didn't realize I had moved closer until I was standing right behind her. Her hair was like flax, smooth as glass, and she was beautiful. I couldn't see her face, but I knew she was. "Ma'am," I said, not realizing I had spoken until I heard the word in my helmet. She stood up, not yet turning to face me. "Ma'am," I said again, softly planting my free hand on her shoulder. I felt a sudden revulsion crawl up my fingers and through my wrist, slowly trickling up my arm like an eight-legged horror. I tore my hand away and watched with growing terror as she turned to me. My stomach knotted up, forcing sour bile up my throat. I tried to step back, but I couldn't. I was frozen in fear. Her face was torn into an impossible grimace, distended into an awful silent cry beneath hollow eyes and hair that was black straw. Hair that was drenched all over a lumpy, malformed scalp like a dead spider. Her skin was made of wrinkles and disease, wrapped over sharp bones that looked like nothing but wire hangers beneath the roadkill rags she wore. I thought of Munches, the scream as her awful, pain-ripped face filled my visor. And then she screamed. It carved through my stomach like a hot dagger. It filled my lungs with icy pain, and needled my ears like a hive of insects. Curtains of darkness fell over my vision as the banshee howled. My legs gave out and I crumpled down, falling into blackness with her screams still singing through my soul. I heard the singing before I opened my eyes. It was lovely. I couldn't understand the words. It was sung in a language that was vaguely foreign, but the melody swung me like a warm blanket that made me feel... I opened my eyes and looked around the dreadful wax museum. That sounds silly, but it was the first thing that sprung to mind. I was in a massive cavern. Black towers of rock spiraled up and down, splitting the cavernous space into sections. Guttering torches threw jagged shapes over. My breath caught in my throat. I squinted, my eyes adjusting to the gloom. Dozens, scores of wax fixtures were melted to the rocky walls. They were vaguely human mounds of wax, fused shoulder to shoulder throughout the craggy, subterranean space. I could see arms and legs drenched in solidified glue, heads which were sealed over spare nose holes and eye holes. Beyond those, I saw living eyes. They watched me, washed with terror from beneath their waxy cocoons. I looked through the gloom and realized all of the wax figures were not figures at all, dead or otherwise, but living things forever imprisoned to the Banshee's cave. Suddenly, the singing was horrible, like something in the back of the refrigerator turned rotten, laced through with a foul taste that made me feel dizzy. I was glad I couldn't see the Banshee. I was afraid that if I did, then my stomach would fold and heave vomit up my throat. I tried to sit up, but I couldn't. I was bound to something. It felt like a rock, but it was warm, pulsing with slimy heat. The singing was getting closer, moving through the cave, ricketing off the strange acoustics, but no doubt getting closer. Then it was right behind me, inches away, right in my ear. The singing stopped. I froze. I tried to make myself small. Dread turned my bladder to jelly. I heard bone crackle and snap as she shifted into view, and I breathed a sigh of relief. She was beautiful once again. Beautiful. I blinked and she shifted, like a reflection on water. And beneath her beauty I saw rot and repulsion. I couldn't look away. Even as she stepped up to one of the wax men and pounded a tree tapper through his chest, I heard a muffled moan of agony. The banshee settled a wooden bucket beneath the spigot and watched as yellowish fluid ran from the wax man's chest and splattering into receptacle. I looked away, horrified. Out of the corner of my vision, I saw her disappear deeper into the cave. I heard the crackle of flame as she started a fire. I had to look. I had to confirm what I already knew. I craned my head. Coarse rope ground into my throat and mouth, tearing away the skin as I forced myself to look deeper into the horrible nest. Vaguely, I saw her standing over a massive cauldron, stirring with a paddle. A smell sweet and strange, funneled up and out as the fire grew beneath it. The smell of melting wax. A bolt of terror lanced through my insides like a hot needle. I looked around the wall of prisoners and they looked back at me. What's worse than death? I swallowed. I struggled against my binds. Coarse rope bit into my flesh and burned. I could see my gear lying a few feet away. My mask and oxygen tank coiled up like a dead thing. As the banshee stirred the massive pot of wax on the corner of my vision, an insane and totally dangerous plan took shape in my mind. My hands were bound by the small of my back, and I desperately patted down the back pockets for a Bic lighter I used to smoke. A firefighter who smokes, there's got to be something to be said about that, I thought crazily as I felt there. My hands found a hard lump in my back pocket. I could see a shadow growing in my peripheral. I fumbled out the Bic and flicked it on. The flame hissed up and licked at my wrists. I stifled a cry as my skin screamed with heat, blistering against the tiny flame that nibbled through the rope binding me. The shadow grew. I heard slight footsteps carried on the sound of bone crackling. Hot tears ran down my chest as the rope frayed and split under the tiny flame. A dull throbbing warmth settled into my fingers and wrists as they were hardened under fire. Then the lighter went out, and the banshee was here. I couldn't look at her. I could see her on the corner of my eye, horrible and broken, face ripped apart by that silent grimace, eyes hollow black sockets, arms too long for a body so narrow. I blinked and she was gone. I slowly turned my head, slowly, slowly. Her face was inches from mine, shredded with silent agony. I screamed. God, how I screamed as she wrapped me into a hug, and I felt her flesh, slimy and awful, over a pincushion of bones that made my skin crawl with my toes curled with disgust. All at once, I wanted to die. I didn't want to escape gallantly and ride off on a white steed. I wanted to fall into the cold abyss of death where things didn't burn or scream or live in shells of wax. I inhaled sharply, pulling a lungful of thick, foul reek and kicked backward. I think the only reason I broke free of her grasp was that I caught her off guard. Suddenly, I was weightless, tumbling towards my gear that was supposed to save my life, that would end it in a heartbeat. The ground drilled into my side, and I kicked and wormed towards the oxygen tank sitting 2 feet away. I gnarled my teeth into the tubing that fed clean breath into my mask, and tore it out of the small black tank. Compressed air hissed out. The Banshee's crooked shadow fell over me. My heart fluttered twice and I ignited the Bic, which caught the oxygen and rode it like a wave. I don't remember much about the explosion. There was a flash of light, but it wasn't a blinding snapshot or a hellish belch of flame. It was a warm expansion, like a rose blossoming in light. Heat searing and suffocating heat sucked me into its boiling belly. The world shook as I burned and laughed and danced through blooming light. My life ended in fire, which is oddly poetic if you think about it. It began again in a riverbed surrounded by woods that were blackened from a nighttime burn. I awoke to the first light of dawn, with a thin trickle of ice running down my face. Water. I was in the river. It tasted like ash. It tasted wonderful. I sat up and looked around. My suit was scorched. My stupid, clunky anti-flame suit was the only thing that had spared my life. I was under open sky in the aftermath of a great fire. Everything was black, hazed with smoke and ash. Clusters of brush still smoldering here and there, but the fire had died with the night. I looked at my hands. They reminded me of roadkill, tired tread marks over splattered guts that had baked in the sun for months. I started to scream. I've been in the hospital for longer than I can remember. Sandy's mom came to visit me. She cried into my bandages. They never found his body, which is why I think I started tail. Maybe to give her closure. Maybe to give it to myself. But as I reached the end of my reaccount, I don't feel anymore. When I shut my eyes, I still see it. Her. The Banshee whose face was torn by pain. Well, I hope that you guys enjoyed the story tonight. If you're new to the channel, please consider subscribing, clicking on that bell, smashing that thumbs up, and sharing with your friends. And again, like always, spread me like butter. Have a good night, and stay spooky.